This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There has been a lot of attention paid in recent years to transgender people and what it means to be transgender. Much of that attention, at least in North Carolina, has come as a result of Charlotte's ordinance, which led to the state passing HB 2. We've been talking about that for a year, and mostly about bathrooms and the fear engendered in some by the possibility that men dressed as women could find their way into a female restroom. That possibility has raised emotions to a fever pitch and put a stop to any forward movement on this issue. But in the frenzy, one thing has been lost: the human element. The people being impacted by HB 2 are people. People have already experienced more discomfort and drama than most, and now they're being thrust into a spotlight they didn't ask for. And thrust along with them into that light are their friends and family, and most especially, their parents. What must it be like to make a transition from one gender to another? What is it like for parents who, along with all the other pressures of parenthood, find themselves navigating uncharted waters? We look at that this hour with three such parents. Ashley Nurkin is the mother of an 8-year-old transgender girl. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Pamela Smith is the mother of Parker Smith, who appeared on this program to talk about their experience as a non-binary individual. That's someone who identifies as neither male nor female, or perhaps both. Do I have it right? Because it's very hard to wrap your head around.
Yes, I just refer to Parker as Parker, not one gender or the other, mm-hmm. Sort of in the middle.
Okay, we don't have, and we'll talk about this, we don't have the vocabulary to talk about that really yet. Maybe that's something that's coming along.
I hope to enlighten.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. And Jay Norris is the father of a 7-year-old transgender girl. Welcome to the program to you, Jay.
Thank you. Happy to be here. I'm proud.
And your child is the youngest in the group at 7 years old. What has this last year been like for you and your family and your child?
It's been an interesting year. It's been an interesting year for us to be going through this experience in the environment that you describe in North Carolina particularly. So for us in our journey with our child, it was an easy decision on the right thing to do, mm-hmm. When we were first presented with what we thought might be the case. Since then, it's been just a journey of love and support, and now advocacy.
Ashley and Jay, 7 and 8-year-olds probably don't follow the news very much, but this does really affect their lives a lot, and it's caused a lot of conversation. And for a long time, it was very hard to avoid conversations about HB2. Are they aware of what's going on? Have they been impacted in any way by it? Do they ask questions about it? Does it bother them?
I would say, you know, the biggest impact on our daily lives is, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's around the bathrooms at school. Mm-hmm. I personally try to protect our daughter from, you know, the rhetoric surrounding HB2. She knows that she can't use the girls' bathroom because there are, quote, laws on the books. We talk about that. We're trying very hard to change those laws. But, you know, yeah, I mean,
What's the reaction when she, who dresses now as a girl,
mm-hmm. she is a girl,
when she walks into the boys' room, because that's where she has to go by law? What happens?
Right. So she doesn't go to the boys' room. Okay. At school. So she uses the bathroom in the administration's office.
Okay.
Right.
So allowances have been made.
Allowances have been made, yes.
But do they ask, has she asked you questions about why all the brouhaha?
She not necessarily why all the brouhaha, but she asks questions like when, and this was a heartbreaking conversation that we had a couple months ago. We were reading a book about some kids in middle school, and she looked at me and she said, you know, Mom, can I be a real girl when I go to middle school? To which I said, you know, I don't understand what you mean. You know, you are a girl. And she said, no, but I don't feel like a real girl because I don't get to use the bathroom like the other girls in my school. Mm. And that was a heartbreaking moment. So, you know, clearly she knows that that she's different. She's singled out.
So which has been more stressful for the three of you? Has it been this HB2 situation, which has brought legal ramifications to all of this, and just discussion in the public forum about something that most people have kept relatively private? Or was it the actual, I don't know the right term here, coming out of this, when your child decided that they were a gender other than the one they were born with? Which was the more stressful period in your lives? Jay.
So, one, I'd answer your question before around, is our daughter aware of HB2? No, she's not. And what I would say around the whole environment, one of the ironies of the argument for the opposition is the privacy. And I would say that these people want, you know, the same privacy that we all do. And in terms of bathrooms, are there to perform a function. And our daughter is always asking me, is the door locked? You know, it's always trying to make sure that no one could get in. So there's no one who's more private than, in our case, our daughter. And what's been really disheartening for us in this is that we have a school that's very supportive, that wants to help, and their hands are tied in terms of what they're able to do. And impact for us, our daughter is also not using the facilities, the female restrooms at school. Accommodations have been made. And when we started this school year, so we ended first grade kind of back and forth on the dress. We started second grade, fully transitioned and dressing as a female. And for probably the first week of school, while our daughter's not familiar with HB2, there was an awareness around bathrooms and being different. And the school day for her is 9 to 4, and she wasn't using the restroom at all for the entire day.
Right. And we had that same issue as well. It was really hard.
Pretty much all transgender. Mm-hmm. Kids. Wow. They will hold it. There are kids who will not eat or drink through a school day so that they will not have to go to the bathroom.
Wow. Pamela, your child is an adult. How old is Parker?
Parker is 24.
Okay. And your child is the most difficult to understand here because, because they are non-binary,
yes,
identifying neither as male nor female. Does that mean it's also fluid? Are there times when Parker identifies as a girl versus a boy and a boy versus a girl at other times?
I believe that Parker sits so much in the center because, let me try to explain also to your guests, yeah, that I'm going to be using the pronouns,
yes,
they, them, and
they,
theirs,
right,
so that we're not speaking in plural here. It's conjugated the same as she, her, hers, he, him, his. I'm just using they, them, theirs.
Okay.
Because in the transgender community, it's a spectrum. Parker sits very much in the middle. Parker presents a little more to the male side, I would say. But Parker never says, I feel more female one day or I feel more male another day. Parker's just Parker, and just wants to be treated as an individual.
Had you ever heard of this prior to Parker telling you that this is how?
In the 70s, I had two friends that were transgender, but they were not non-binary. Non-binary was new to me when Parker came out to me as trans at the end of the freshman year at App State.
Because she came out first at 16 as lesbian.
Parker just came out. Parker never really said. Parker walked into my bedroom with the person that they cared for, who was female,
okay,
and said, this is the person that I care for.
So you made the assumption that...
I didn't make...
any assumptions.
Yeah, this is me. I don't put people in boxes,
okay,
and I don't make assumption. That is who my child cared for.
Okay.
I felt maybe more to the gay side. Okay, we're good. My child is happy. My child is being authentic, and that was good. The non-binary aspect was something that's been a learning experience, to learn that some individuals are fluid. They can present more as female one day and more male another. They flow through that spectrum a little more freely.
We talked about it, I believe, when Parker was on this program, but I don't remember the answer. So I'll ask you, how did they come to understand it in themselves? How did they realize, I'm not gay, I don't feel like a man, I don't feel like a woman, I feel like this other entity?
I think for Parker, as best that I can understand, when Parker got to App State, Parker became a part of an organization or a club called Transaction, which supports the transgender community throughout the Boone area and at App State.
Okay.
I believe with many children, Parker finally saw where they fit in. That fit what they felt. There were people like them, and they had a word for what they were. And so then they could live their life going, ah, that's it. This is where I sit.
For Parker, this, and forgive me if I use the wrong words, and that's part of the problem of having this conversation. It's difficult to find the right words. I don't think the English language is equipped yet for this. But your child came to their determination of their gender orientation much later in life than Ashley and Jay's children, who were 7 and 8. When did you first think, this is not a phase.
Right.
This is something more.
Mm-hmm. Really young, actually. So my child started, we started noticing she was different around 4. So where, you know, and I hate to use old pronouns, but when he at the time was in preschool, you know, my child always wanted to go to the dress-up drawer and get all the princess clothes out. All of my child's friends were girls. Always wanted to be the queen and the princess when they were playing make-believe. So we knew, you know, there, if you were to kind of define like that stereotypical girl at 4 years old, that was my kid.
That was your kid.
Right.
What about you, Jeff?
At around, well, I'll say our daughter's favorite color has always been rainbow. So I think when we look back, when we look back on certain things, I think we can see that it may have been more than that at the time. But at age 5, similarly started to dress up in little sister's Disney princess dresses. That was fine. We've always been open and taught our children that gender doesn't own color and any of these kind of gender norms in society. And then afterward, that went on for a little bit. We did go out and buy other, you know, ninja, pirate, fireman costumes too. Those stayed in the packaging. It was only the Disney princess dresses. She came back and said, these are nice, but I need some in my size. They don't fit well. Her sister's 2 years younger. And so we got the appropriate size. And then she came back after that and said, I would like to have real girl dresses, real girl clothes. I don't like these. But I don't want to wear them outside of the house because I don't want anyone to laugh at me. And for us, that was a turning point because we realized there was an awareness of difference and potential for shame.
I've read an article in Charlotte Parent about your child, and your wife is quoted in that article as saying that your son was happier when you were allowing her to express herself as a girl. All three of you seem, and I don't know what you've gone through prior to this moment in time, but all of you seem to be remarkably well adjusted to this. And relaxed and comfortable with this. Many people might be thinking, how did you arrive at that? Was it always this way? And I want to take a break. We'll come back and get an answer to that. And I know that several of you are involved in help groups to help other parents. Do other parents struggle more than you did with this? We'll come back and get answers to those questions in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Dr. John Powderly at Carolina Bio-Oncology Institute in Huntersville, a cancer therapy and research center specializing in immunotherapy clinical trials for metastatic cancer. CarolinaBioOncology.org. This is one of only a handful of high-income nations that does not require employers to offer paid maternity or paternity leave to employees. Only about 12% of people in the United States have that benefit. But maternity leave has been shown to be essential for the health and well-being of both baby and mother. And more companies are beginning to see this and offer that as a benefit, and the mayor has suggested the city should jump on board too. So we take a closer look at this slow growing trend tomorrow on this program at 9.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Democrats are taking a page from the Tea Party as grassroots resistance to President Trump grows. We'll look at the movement. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join On Point from 10 to noon following Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about transgender children with parents of three transgender children in this new world in which we live, where we're talking about this almost on a daily basis because of HB2. Jay Norris is here. He's the father of a seven-year-old transgender girl. Pamela Smith is the mother of Parker, who is a non-binary individual identifying neither completely as either gender. And Ashley Nurkin is the mother of an eight-year-old girl. You all seem, as I said, remarkably well-adjusted to this. Was it always thus? I know that you were you described yourself, Ashley, as you and your husband a little freaked out initially by this. Where did the three of you turn, or did you turn for help or information or discovery here?
Right. Well, it was definitely. I mean, it's been a journey. So we may look, you know, very relaxed and comfortable now, but I can't say that was always the case for sure. Especially when, you know, you're starting this journey, you're really not sure what the heck is going on. So it took a lot of research, a lot of PFLAG meetings, which is where I turned to for support, and a lot of therapy.
Okay.
So yes,
Jay.
And Mike, I'd comment on the quote you referenced before we took a break, which was that my wife said, our child seemed happier. Mm-hmm. And in its simplest terms, aren't we all happier when we're allowed to be ourselves? So, yes, we may seem relaxed and comfortable now, but as Ashley described, it's been a journey to get there. For us, it was initially trying to understand, and I think for a period we felt like, and I use an analogy, that the train was moving so fast that we couldn't catch up. And so we had to quickly educate ourselves and figure out what was happening and then how we could help. And it didn't take long to look at the situation and decide the right thing to do, which again was to love and support our child and figure out how we could help them. And
Pamela, yours has been a curious journey, I would think. But when did you first know that something was different, and how did you come to terms with it?
I have always known something wasn't the quote-unquote norm with Parker, probably from the time they toddled. Couldn't put my finger on it, but knew there was a difference. Then at 16, as I said, the walk into my room, normally that's how Parker threw things out at me. Just, okay, I'm walking into your room and going, oh, by the way, this is the person I love. And it was pretty much an, okay, now I have my answer.
There was an article in the paper this morning, a tiny little article in the paper about Dallas Woodhouse, who's with the Republican Party in North Carolina, who retweeted a link to a story that appeared in some publication that described transgender individuals as being mentally ill perverts. What do you say to people who believe that?
Our children are not perverts or pedophiles. They are human beings that are trying to live authentically who they are. This is who they are. This is how they identify. And they just want to live a life as normally as they can, like all of us, and not to be seen that way. And that's really sad for all of us, that's how many people see our children, especially with my child being the age that they are.
What does that do to you when you read an article like that or you hear somebody say that? And a lot of these things were said during city council meetings and other protests, et cetera, around the state during these HB2 conversations. I mean, this has to hurt.
It's obviously frustrating for parents like ourselves, and there are things we'd like to say, but we won't. And so we'll focus on because the initial reaction is to be so frustrated. So I think what we'd prefer to do is to try to help educate, ask people to ask us questions, to educate themselves, to form their own opinion, not the opinion of a political party or what someone else has told them. And that's – if there's one good benefit of HB2, it's having more conversations like this, having more awareness about what's happening and the reality of the gender spectrum.
That was going to be one of my questions later in the program. Mm-hmm. Has HB2 had a silver lining in that it has provoked – a conversation about something that we never really talked about? No one ever talked about this.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I guess that would be the only silver lining, is that it's forcing conversations. I mean, I don't know if we would even be sitting here today.
Probably not.
Right, if it weren't for, you know, what's going on in our state with HB2. So, you know, honestly, I think we could all agree that, you know, it's time to see transgender people. We're not going to hide in the shadows anymore. We are a normal family. Just like everybody else. I mean, I have two daughters, one cisgender, meaning that the gender identity and the sex assignment at birth matches up.
But it's this and the gay movement and other issues like this that have resulted in this election turning out. In part, it was in part about jobs, mm-hmm. in part, but making America great again to many people was also to push all this back into the shadows again, because this is part of the liberal agenda to change our viewpoint on what these people are like. You live with these people. You've lived with these people since they were born. These are not what these people are like, correct?
Yes.
It's not an agenda. It's not an agenda to make you do something you don't want to do. It's an agenda to let people live their lives. Is that a better way to say it?
Be themselves.
Yeah.
Authentic.
Yeah. Because Dr. Deanna Atkins of the Duke Center for Child and Adolescent Gender Care points out that some children begin to cross-identify as early as 2, which is a time in their life when they are clearly not old enough to make a choice or even understand what they're talking about. And yet, like homosexuality, which this is not, people see this as a choice. You never saw this as a choice?
I never did.
I never did.
No.
None of us.
Not at
all. I don't think any of us have. This is the way our children identify.
And this is also, as I said, not homosexuality. A boy who wants to wear a dress isn't necessarily a gay person. A girl who wants to go out and play, I don't know, football and wear whatever guys wear are not necessarily gay. How can we better understand it? Just what is just becoming apparent, this fluidity that you refer to, I think, Pamela, this fluidity of gender and this fluidity of sexuality, because we're so binary in this world.
The problem is that everyone wants to put you within a box, and the body parts you are born with are not what make you that. It's how you identify. It's what tells you inside of your head what you are. It's not your anatomy.
So why, if you're born as a boy or you're born as a girl and you think you're the other, or if you're Parker, you think you're not
either. You sit in the middle of the spectrum, yes.
Why is that not a mental illness?
Wow. Why would it be considered one? I guess that's the puzzle look for us, because why is it considered that? That, to me, it is my child being who they are.
Because, Ashley, you said that gender identity is a deep sense of who you are. Mm-hmm. That's in your brain.
Your brain.
It's not a mental disorder. It is the way you were born.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is there any... Or have there been any scientific studies to look into this? Is there a chemical difference in
Yes.
the brain? Is there a difference in the way the brain is wired?
Yes, and interestingly enough, the National Geographic just did a special called Gender Revolution, which I highly recommend anyone watch it. I think it's they go in depth into talking about just that something happens in utero, and while the research... There hasn't been a ton of research up until now, but they are finding that it has to do with the amount of testosterone or lack thereof that a fetus is getting. So it truly is something that happens while, you know, the baby is growing inside a mother's the mother's stomach. This has nothing to do with, quote, the choice. It is how you are born.
And on the most basic fundamentals in learning for us, it's there's anatomy, gender identity, and gender expression.
Right.
And so, again, it's different from sexuality. And so that's the building block to then have the conversation and understand. And then to your point and Ashley's as well, there is science behind it. And in the same special that Ashley referenced, and there's more and more science, there are brain scans that show that a trans woman's brain is more like a cisgender woman's brain than it is a male brain.
As I said, you're all relatively well-adjusted, and you appear to be well-adjusted, and you seem to have taken this pretty well, although I'm sure you were, there were moments when you tried to figure out what the heck is going on and what am I going to do about it. So where do you turn if this presents itself in your family? Where do you turn as the parent? And I'm sure there are parents that you've met, because I know that two of you work in these support groups, where the parents are not as well-adjusted to this as you are and maybe fighting it or maybe despondent about this. How do you help those people?
Well, I think the first thing that I always say is you got to support your child. Even if you have to fake it till you make it, you have to support your child because it's honestly a matter of life and death to some
because,
to some children.
One of you, and I don't know which one of it was, I'm sorry, wrote about having this conversation in the car. A lot of good conversations happen in cars because people don't have to look at each other. And if you don't look at each other, then you can say more. But you, I think your child was in the back seat and you were in the front, so you could see them in the rearview mirror. But you were navigating what you were saying very carefully here so as not to upset them and to make it appear everything was fine. Which one of you was that?
I think
Ashley?
That was me.
Okay. So what do you tell a parent who is not taking this well?
Well, again, you have to support your child just for that child's mental state, their emotional state, and just your child's not harming anybody by letting them express themselves with who they want to be. So, you know, I always go back to support your kid and come to places like PFLAG where you can talk about, I'm uncomfortable. This doesn't make me, I don't know.
PFLAG is Parents and Friends of Lesbian and
Gays.
Yes,
right. And then in the 1990s, we expanded that to include transgender and, right,
and
you
know,
gender
do you
non-conforming
not
individuals.
Yes.
Oh,
I volunteer with Time Out Youth, which is an organization that is a safe place for LGBTQ youth in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yes, I've been there for 3 years. I volunteered for Parker, worked for Time Out Youth, and I see it often. I see children whose parents do not support them. I see children who come in and are kicked out. They have to be found. They find them homes. I've sat with children that trying to figure out how to tell their parents, how to come out to their parents. And I've sat with parents who were confused and bewildered. And like Ashley said, the one thing I want parents to understand is in any of your confusion, support your child. Mm-hmm. Love your child because validation is so important. Your child is looking into your eyes to know that they're safe and that they're okay.
Yeah.
And it helps them to get through their life doing that. When it doesn't happen, it's catastrophic.
Who helps you? Because human nature being what it is, when this hits home and you realize this is the new reality here, and we have to deal with this, and if you really love your child, I'm going to make my child as happy as they can be by letting them be who they are. You still have to work, you still have to think about what's the reaction to this going to be among extended family, among coworkers, and among the next-door neighbors and the people across the street. Suddenly this little boy is walking out of the house like a girl. What are they going to think? How do you handle that?
For us, the initial support was with those closest. So my wife and I trying to figure out where we were and then how we were going to support one another and then build that support structure. And so she talks about find your people. And for us, I'll describe, again, you know, referencing the train that was moving too fast and hard for us to keep up, we hit a lot of closed doors early on when we were trying to find information in terms of specialists that didn't treat children as young as ours or doctors that didn't have a whole lot of experience or information. And it wasn't until we called PFLAG that we got the support and the connectivity that we needed. And that's actually how we met Ashley and her family. And we've connected with a number of other families in this way. And it's showing our child that there's nothing wrong, that they're not different. There are other children like them. It's allowed us to make connections that we can have conversations around some of the challenges that we're having. And then the work that, that Ashley and Pam are doing are helping offer that to more and more families and people.
Is the average pediatrician equipped to deal with this, or do they have to refer you to?
No.
They are not equipped.
That's a big problem.
And that is a problem in the area, and both counseling and a physician.
I mean, do they refer you, or do they just go,
Well, it's getting a physician to be comfortable with using pronouns and understanding all of those things about your child to make them comfortable when they're seeing them, and also counseling, because you have to have specific counseling with someone who is familiar with the transgender community to be able to successfully make it through it, I believe.
Both of your young children, 7 and 8, made this decision that they wanted to be girls and they wanted to dress as girls, and it started inside the house, and gradually it took itself outside the house and into the classroom and into schools where they had been known as boys prior to this. That strikes me as incredibly brave for anybody, but really for a 7 and 8-year-old, I can't imagine where that courage comes from. What was the reaction of their friends and their schoolmates?
Well, I'll say their bravery inspires us. So it allows us to be brave. If they can be that strong, we're committed to be strong for them.
They think of it as being brave, or do they just think, I'm going to do this? Off we go.
Well, I think it's not a decision for them. And so it's not about bravery for them. It's about being themselves. And then the reaction at school, what we found, and we found this largely in our community too, is there is a lot of acceptance. And the children love our child for our child, not for how they dress or how they present. And there may have been some questions, but that's natural curiosity for other young children. And what we found is that, and I know that it'll get more difficult as they get older, that in most cases, the children aren't predispositioned to have an aversion to this. It's not until their parents or someone else teaches them that something's wrong, that they start to question and wonder if there's something wrong.
Again, I don't remember who said this or where I read it, but a child was presented with this as a fact, that suddenly their friend is a different gender, and they went to the teacher because she said, you can't do that. You can't just dress like that. And they went to the teacher, and the teacher said, yes, you can. Okay.
Right.
Off we go.
It's not the children that you have to worry about. That's really
no, it's not the children.
All my daughter's friends cared about was, are you fun to play with? And, you know, are you a nice person? That's it.
And again, some of the questions were, why are you wearing that? Because I like it. And the kids will move on.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of this conversation and how to deal with the fear that comes along with all of this in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and UNC Charlotte's Department of Theater presenting Lillian Hellman's drama, The Children's Hour, February 22nd through 26th at Robinson Hall. Tickets and details at arts.uncc.edu. Protests against President Trump continue, including a big march in Raleigh over the weekend. Democrats and organizers of the Trump resistance appear to be taking a page from the Tea Party, which mobilized conservative opposition early on in the Obama administration. So, on the next day, I'm not sure which number this is, of the On Point's 100-Day Spotlight, Tom Ashbrook and his guests will take a look at that phenomenon coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on Point. We will continue our conversation in just a few moments, and you can reach us at charlottetalks at WFAE.org or through Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
He is walking the earliest roots of human migration out of Africa, then across the Middle East.
It's your community. we help you understand it.
These bills would not just repeal HB 2, they would make it statewide policy to allow anyone to use any public bathroom or locker room based on their gender identity.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Ashley Nurkin and Pamela Smith and Jay Norris. They are all parents of transgender or non-binary individuals. Some emails, and we're talking about this whole process of how you learn about this, how you deal with it, how you explain it, and then how you shepherd your child through the formative years of life and into adulthood. Dennis emails, as a parent of a gay child, I ask a question to people who argue that it's a choice. Your guests might find it useful. I ask, so when did you decide you were heterosexual? That was probably a significant day for you, so tell me about it. And they cannot, because it is not a choice. Bill emails, the best answer to why is this not a mental illness is simple. The trans person is fully functional in the work of daily life. Any problems are those imposed by an unaccepting society, not from internal problems. You're all nodding.
Very well said. Yes, very well said.
Good parents are always concerned for their children. And raising a transgender, people are afraid for their children all the time for various different reasons. And I would imagine that transgender parents or children, parents of transgender children have an additional layer of that fear placed on them. When this journey began, what was your greatest fear, and has it proven to be legitimate? Jay.
Greatest fear was that my child wouldn't be accepted by classmates in the world, and bullying, and we've not found that to be the case, fortunately.
Pamela.
I fear and have feared for a while for Parker's safety. Parker is also older, and because Parker is so active in the community with the work that they do, it is a real fear, because people are uncomfortable with what Parker stands for. Just this weekend, we were at a little place outside of Asheville. We were traveling from Asheville towards Black Mountain and pulled into a convenience store. And Parker, even at this age, I was going to stay in the vehicle. And Parker said, Mom, I really would like you to go in with me. Because Parker felt uncomfortable and Parker didn't feel safe. There was just something about that environment that made Parker feel unsafe. When Parker was at App, there were slurs thrown. When I was walking with Parker down the street. So, of course, you do. And Parker was the victim of an attempted kidnapping at App. And the first thing that went through my mind, though it did not come to be that, was that Parker was targeted because Parker was trans.
Hmm. Ashley.
I would definitely echo Jay's sentiment, is that my biggest fear was that she wasn't going to be accepted. I remember, her first day of second grade, and she was all ready to go to school in her, cute little dress and her cute little Mary Janes. And I had to have my husband take her to school because I was just a complete sobbing mess because I was so afraid of how the kids were going to react to her. They've been great.
Do the fears change as the years go on, do you think?
I think they will.
Yeah, I think for me it's different because Parker came out later, and because Ashley's and Jay's children are younger, and as I said, children learn a learned behavior in some ways when you don't accept someone. It comes from the environment, your parents, other things. Well, Parker was older, so therefore probably experiencing much more of that because Parker was older.
We live in a world, at least in this country, where things are, it's become acceptable suddenly to be politically incorrect. where people feel free to say and do anything they damn well please. Just like they can on the internet anonymously, they feel free to do it in public and say some pretty severely nasty things to people. And violence can ensue in some cases where you don't believe what I believe. Much of this came out during arguments over HB2. It certainly came out over other things in this election cycle. This is a very emotional time in which we live. So how do you as parents balance the desire for your child to live a happy and fulfilled life as their personal selves with the fears, the danger that comes with the tenor of the times?
I feel like, you know, with Jay's child and my child being so young, I don't really have that experience as far as worrying about violence against my child at this point. You know, again, we're so lucky because our school is supportive. My family is supportive. Our community is supportive. So there is that rhetoric out there and a lot of the fear-mongering, but I feel like we're in a place where we can kind of block that out, where it doesn't really affect us on a daily basis.
I think if anything, some of the fear comes from, and the safety aspect comes from us being out there more and us trying to tell our story and tell our child's story and the potential that someone may then...
Do you get pushback when you tell your story? Do you get people...
I have not.
Okay.
I have.
You have. What kind of things have been said?
That it is an illness. Mm-hmm. That I've still had someone talk about pedophiles and perversion and, I mean, to my face.
Why do you think that is a common misconception? And it's completely untrue.
Oh, this I believe whole, because this, of this, the rhetoric.
This whole thing about safety in bathrooms is a red herring. There is no
men dressed as women can go into a women's restroom today with whatever harmful intentions they may have, with or without.
Men have gone into two women's restrooms dressed as men and harmed children before.
Well, what drives this? What drives these misconceptions?
The rhetoric, can I say conservative? The rhetoric. I mean, fear is how you can get to people. If you've got an agenda, fear works. We've seen it in the political process, especially the past year.
If it supports what you want to believe, right, then it's easy to use, right, and hold on to that and use it to scare other people into believing what you believe.
And without any basis in fact,
yeah,
there isn't anything statistically that shows that there are individuals that walk into bathrooms pretending to be something to molest children. It just
it
isn't there.
Happened.
There isn't
no
statistically
evidence.
Anything, yeah, that tells you
so
that.
So if you choose to ignore the evidence and science, then...
And it's because, I think, I'm not playing, from what I've read, people confuse sex with gender, and they're not the same.
They confuse sexual orientation with your gender identity.
Right.
Right.
And they are totally separate
but
things.
But sex is part of this, and this is where it really gets complicated because of this gender confusion. They confuse gender identity with sexual orientation. What does the future hold there? What are the challenges ahead? 7 and 8, you don't have to think about this, but 16 and 17 and 20 and 30, you do.
Well,
when you mention 7 and 8, you don't have to think about it, but also to the point of it being different, our child doesn't have sexuality at this point, but does have a gender identity.
Right.
The gender identity was there, as you mentioned all along. The emailer mentioned, when did you know you were gay? When did you know? Ashley's husband talks about, when did you know you were male?
Mm-hmm.
You have always been.
That's right.
And they don't yet, but they will, because there will be things to consider as far as puberty blockers as children get older. So it does start to be
puberty blockers?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Sort of holds things in suspension.
Uh-huh.
With children.
You have a while to think about that, I suppose, but this is something that you have to think about, that mm-hmm. parents don't have to think about. And individuals who aren't transgender don't have to think about that. What happens I know you would have to be from people you have talked to because you haven't gone through this yet, but what happens when that happens? What does that do to that person's life? I mean, do they live a lonely, single experience their entire life? Or how do you deal with that?
And this I don't see any reason why they would. I think the puberty blockers put essentially a pause on development.
Are there side effects to that? Negative side effects? Health side effects to that?
No.
Yeah, to our knowledge,
the study's been shown that if you decide to come off of them, then your puberty starts to progress the way that it normally would have. And if you decide to then move over to cross hormones, which are different, right? The puberty blockers are the pause, so let's stop, let the mind mature some more and ensure that we're making the right decision, and then potentially move over to cross hormones.
If the children decide
that.
Because those are all choices that the children to guide us in. We sort of follow their lead. Parker, you say lonely. I can tell you there are fears. However, my child is engaged. My child graduated with honors at App State. My child lives a full life with friends. And so, no, I don't think that would be the case.
Do you think it'll get better with time? I mean, we live in the very beginnings of this for a lot of people. This is the very first time anybody has really discussed this outside of individual families. It's kind of like domestic violence. That was always kept in the – it was a family thing. Everyone never talked about it. Now people are talking openly about this. So as they continue to talk about this, as we settle HB2 going down the road, in 10 years when your child is 17 and 18, in 20 years when they're 27 and 28, will this be less of a problem for people, do you think?
Absolutely. There are already studies that show and look at the demographics to say millennials have a much higher percentage of acceptance and understanding of this type of
issue. Why do you think that is? Why?
More educated, more open. They have more experience, more exposure. There are more people that are out there telling their stories about being trans, about being non-binary. So they're exposed to it more.
You're involved with PFLAG. Are you seeing a change in this? Are you seeing a change in the conversation about this in the world, at least in this part of the world?
I can definitely tell you that the number of families coming in that have young transgender children, we literally probably see 1 to 2 new families each month. Mm-hmm. So when we started our Transparents of PFLAG, which is kind of it's a subgroup that runs under that PFLAG umbrella, it was another mom and I started in 2015. It was me and one other mom, so it was two families. And we now have over 20 families mm-hmm. with 90% of the families have elementary age school children.
Is there any way to figure out whether more kids are deciding or to live their lives authentically because they know that other people are doing it? Or what's the question? Do you think it's a growing phenomenon or just people, it's always been there at the same level, but now people are more willing to share that with other people?
I think it's growing acceptance and more willing to share. And I don't think any child looks at, a trans child and says, I want to try that or that's giving me the strength. I think to the points we've made here, it's the love and support from their family. If they see the acceptance, the unconditional acceptance from their parents, then they feel comfortable and strong enough to be themselves.
How helpful has the faith community been in this? Not either in your personal experience or what you've heard anecdotally from people you work with at PFLAG and also at Time Out Youth. How helpful or unhelpful has the faith community been? Or has it just been neutral?
Are you saying individually or not individually?
I don't know. I just
our experience is just our experience.
Okay.
Parker was in the church from the age of 2, and at 16 said they would never walk through the doors of our church again because that is where they suffered the most ridicule. And that was hard for me. That was hard. Mm-hmm. That was a hard day because that is the place where I would have thought my child would have been accepted and loved and cared for, and it wasn't. So everybody's experience is different. That was just our experience.
Our preschool is associated with a church, and they've been overwhelmingly supportive.
Okay. You brought up a point earlier, Jay, and you've said this in writing, that no one is more private than a trans individual. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the conversation around HB2 has been about restrooms and locker rooms. And you're saying that trans people don't necessarily want to change among other people, particularly teenage trans people, because the people at that age are usually fairly embarrassed by their bodies anyway.
So if they're fairly embarrassed about their bodies, and if one of the reasons that they may want to go on hormone blockers to pause puberty is because essentially their body is not in agreement, then they absolutely, if they're uncomfortable with it, they don't want you to see it.
Right. Okay. What have you learned from your children in this experience?
I mean, be your authentic self. That's the most important thing. Be who you are.
Bravery, resilience, just being authentic. I think we all would love to be more authentic sometimes than our own children are now. Hmm. I know I would. I admire my kid. I look up to Parker.
Being brave, understanding differences, celebrating differences, realizing we're all humans and should support one another.
There's a Stephen Sondheim song that goes, the lyrics go, careful the things you say, children will listen. And there have been a lot of things said. So how do you help your child through all of this? We only have about 30 seconds left. Just be there.
Support, love, acceptance, unconditional acceptance. As I said, they want to look in your eyes and know they're safe.
I'll let you have the last word. Pamela Smith is the mother of Parker Smith, who is a non-binary individual. Ashley Nurkin is the mother of an 8-year-old transgender girl. And Jay Norris, the father of a 7-year-old transgender girl. Thank you very much for the hour.
Thank you very much. Thank you.